My name is Christy Sanjaya. I work for the mayor in the Economic Development Corporation. My role is to head the industry transformation teams for the city. I work closely with the private, public, and academic sectors to develop innovative programs to help strengthen our core industries such as financial services, media and technology, and fashion. But I also work with emerging industries such as green tech and biotech. So in the past few years, we have really put in a significant amount of time and supporting the startup ecosystem. So today I'm really honored to be on this panel with four of our startup leaders. But before I invite them to introduce themselves, but I think many of you know who they are, I just want to introduce one more entrepreneur. It's our city's entrepreneur-in-chief who couldn't make it here but has a message that he wants me to deliver to all of you.
I'm Mike Bloomberg, mayor of the greatest city on earth. Austin's pretty cool, too. 31 years ago, I started a small tech company in New York, and everyone said that I was crazy. They said the same thing when I ran for mayor. But in everything I've done, I've never stopped thinking like an entrepreneur, always believing in the power of innovative ideas. Today, the startup culture in New York City has never been more exciting, and it's turning New York into the place to be for the tech community. There are nearly 1,000 tech startups in our city, from homegrown successes like Foursquare, Tumblr, and Gilt Group, to the great companies represented on this panel. To support this ecosystem, our administration has launched dozens of initiatives, from an early stage investment fund, to a network of incubators, to the new Applied Science Campus being built by Cornell University and the Technion Institute of Technology. So I want to invite everyone in Austin to come to New York City and be a part of a startup culture that is making New York a place to be for young entrepreneurs. I can't promise that you'll all end up being mayor, but hey, this is an act for that. Good luck. I'm Mike Bloomberg, mayor of the greatest city on earth.
Great. So I'm looking forward to receiving the mayoral apps because you never know, one of our four panelists might become the mayor of New York in the next few years. So here we are. We have a couple of our startup leaders, Barry Silbit, who's from Second Market. We have Divya Ganani from Send a Trend. We have David Kidder from Clickable and Liz Crawford from Birchbox. So before I get started in terms of talking about the ecosystem, maybe I'll just invite each of you to talk about how did you get started in the New York City startup ecosystem? And we're talking about this startup ecosystem that never sleeps. How have you been taking advantage of the city who never sleeps to build up your empire in New York City?
Sorry, Nick. Okay. Hey, everybody. How cool is that? The mayor did a video for us. I think it's awesome. So I started off as an investment banker. I'm one of those guys. I like to say I'm a recovering investment banker and decided after seeing the light I was going to go build something. And so I started my company in 2005. And today we have about 140 employees, mainly in New York. We also have an office in the Bay Area and one in Hong Kong. And have also gotten really involved now in investing and as an angel investor. So I've kind of went from, you know, working on the dark side to building a company to now starting to support other entrepreneurs in the city, like Divya, actually.
Very similar story, recovering investment banker as well. So started my career at Goldman Sachs in investment banking. I moved on to venture capital, which is where I actually met David and Barry and have known them for years. So worked on the investment side, kind of with entrepreneurs, helping them build and grow their businesses, and decided that I was envious and wanted to jump over and do it myself. So launched my first business in 2008 called Behind the Burner. Most recently have been running a company called Send the Trend, which is focused on fashion accessories and beauty for women, a very curated collection, which just got sold to QVC. And what I really love about New York is that I just feel like there's an incredibly dynamic startup community. And I definitely came into this community as an investor and got to meet lots of young businesses. Then I had the pleasure of kind of running my own business and then calling up every single person that I knew for help because I didn't know what I was doing. And kind of reached out to all the people I made connections with as an investor. And now, like Barry, have come full circle and spent a lot of time working with other young entrepreneurs and angel investing in startup companies.
That's Good story. My name is David with Clickable, and we're in the ad tech business. I've been in New York since my early 20s and have built my entire career there. This is our fourth startup with the same kind of band that I keep getting back together in technology and design. I studied mechanical engineering and industrial design and use a lot of that now in our own product development. We're about between New York and office in need, about 160 people and growing, and it's been an amazing experience. And we do a lot of angel deals together as well, so there's a lot of cross-pollination of investing that comes in these circles. So New York is super vibrant. There's a lot of people who are investing at the seed and A level, and there's a lot of funds to take companies through now. Not quite in the full path, the kind of late stage stuff, but definitely in the beginning to get things in a birth direction. So everybody always asks about when is the first $1 billion company to come through. There's been many, and we think that the pipeline's quite big. And that over the next, because it takes a long time to build companies, often 8 to 10 years just to get them out. There's a big, big pipeline of companies that are coming through that will show that the first kind of generation of investors going from seed and beyond are starting to birth exciting new industries. So we're excited to be part of it.
So I'm Liz with Birchbox, and I actually came to New York to work in the startup scene. So I did a PhD in computer science at Carnegie Mellon, and I met someone who I really wanted to start a company with, and he lived in New York, and so I actually moved to New York after I finished my PhD to work on that company with him. And that company is it's no more now, but I now work at Birchbox, and the reason why I've stayed in New York is because there's amazing opportunities to work on amazing companies.
Great. So, you know, we have two recovering investment bankers on our panel, and, you know, New York is really known for our financial services industry. Do you believe that, you know, the crash have led to a permanent change to how this financial services industry is going to grow in New York? And as a result, are a lot of talent moving into different fields, maybe starting new companies? Or is it just a blip in our economic cycle?
I think it's, you can see by the numbers, you know, New York is really emerging as one of the top cities in the world to start a company. And it's interesting, during the credit crisis in 2008, you know, me and some other entrepreneurs from the city were called in to a meeting with the mayor, actually, and the EDC, and the mayor's office was like, okay, hey, we have a city here that is so completely dependent on the financial services space, and things were really, really screwed up. This was kind of 2008-ish, you know, Lehman and others were starting to kind of go under, and the mayor said, hey, look, you know, let's look out what 20 years from now, what do we want the city to become, and what are some ideas that we could use to kind of foster entrepreneurship and small business and new industries. And what's really exciting is you saw briefly this, you'll talk more about the Applied Sciences School, the Cornell School. But
big red.
but they're, you know, as a result of a roundtable discussion of a lot of people from the city, you saw the funding, the creation of what is going to be one of the top technical schools in the country, probably the world, emerge over the next few years. And so, you know, from my perspective, while the city has historically been the financial capital of the world, fashion capital of the world, media capital of the world, it is going to become a startup capital of the world. For the sheer fact, it already is the financial and media and fashion and all these other capitals of the world. You've got the talent, and now with this school, I think we'll have the technical talent as well.
BBS, anything to add?
Yeah, I think what Barry said is totally correct. I think that a lot of people start their career in finance because, you know, 10 plus years ago, actually now more than that, that was one of the only choices for a job when graduating college and moving into New York. One of the biggest recruiters on campus was, you know, all the financial services players if you wanted to move to New York, or maybe the consulting companies. But what's so amazing is that this community has really evolved in New York, and you're seeing so many new opportunities, and I would say particularly for women, in areas like food, fashion, beauty, and, you know, allowing people to really pursue their personal passions and take it on and, you know, leverage a little bit of technology to create something interesting.
And I know back in the day, as a young single guy, being an investment banker used to be a great way to pick up chicks. Now, you know, working at, you know, a Goldman Sachs, that doesn't get it done. But say you're an entrepreneur, That's good stuff.
Well, David, you started in the startup scene way earlier than any one of us here. You know, you're the older or more experienced, I should say, entrepreneur in the crowd.
How is this
10 years? I mean, how the past 10 years different from the previous, say, 10 years?
That's funny because I was just saying that this conference feels very much like the 90s in the .com era if you lived through it. So we had a lot of fun in our 20s in New York during the .com era. It was lots of this stuff going on. The difference is that a lot of entrepreneurs have built and sold and failed a lot. So like the difference between now, back then, this is very much like the Valley too, is when you see people in the Valley who are around you, if they have money, if they've been successful, it's probably because they were in technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in New York, they made their money in technology is like, it's just never happens. So you actually have no one around you who's done it before who can actually say, oh, this is how I created this outcome. Because they work in finance, they work in media, or something completely different. And so part of what's different now is that you have enough critical mass of like kind of a recycling of entrepreneurs and capital and learning that's now starting to take hold that I still think we're probably two decades away, or you know, probably 20 or 30 years before we have, or at least 20, before you have enough big capital and big exits and big companies going through where the learning gets kind of cemented, where the probability that you can go in and create something that's dynamic and massive is much higher, like more like the Valley, but it's still a ways off. But the difference now is that it's just education and connections and capital everywhere. You can't, if you're in our area in the city, you know, every restaurant or every meeting place is full of tech. Mm-hmm. And even a decade ago, it just did not exist anywhere. There was literally no education. There was no incubator. There was no, even Steve Blank, who comes to speak to the city, the knowledge was not there. And that's really what's changed most dramatically. So,
and then when I talk to you,
and I'm not that old, by the way.
He started his first startup when he was 10.
Yes,
so
exactly.
That's his real age. So I have the privilege to be working with a number of you in the past few years. And, as I get to know each of you, I realize that you've been working closely with each other for a couple of years as well. And then, I think, Divya, you invested in some of the companies here when you were with Firstmark. And then, Barry, now you're investing in Divya Company. So how is that ecosystem evolving?
Well, it's interesting. As a former investment banker becoming an entrepreneur, I remember distinctly that, David Kidder here, he embraced me as a young first-time entrepreneur. We share an investor in Firstmark. And very early on, this was probably 2007 after they invested, David invited me to...
Can I mention your breakfast?
Yeah, okay. So David organizes a monthly breakfast called the Serial... play on words breakfast, entrepreneur breakfast, and it really has become the hot ticket in town. And so like once a month, it's like every third Thursday or what it is?
Every third Thursday.
Third Thursday. And when I started going, I was embraced by the other entrepreneurs in the city. And again, this is 2007-ish. And it was a very tight-knit community then, and I got support from everybody. But now that this breakfast is, it's like really kind of hard to kind of get a seat most weeks or months. But you're still embraced, and now I'm kind of starting to kind of give back to the other folks in the community. And now you can see again how much inbreeding is happening because I invested in Divya's company. She just got an exit. She invested in my company. We're like Dave and I are like brothers because we have the same investor. I'm sure Liz will trade. She'll trade on second market, and yeah.
Yeah, and this putting you on the spot, I think you are kind of the newest member, the youngest member here to the ecosystem. What's your feeling about this New York ecosystem? Do you feel like you are now part of a community? Was it hard to get into this community? Maybe you can share the experience with our audience.
Well, I think the community I'm more part of is more the software engineering community, mm-hmm. to be fair. So, and that's a community I've primarily and that's partly for recruiting reasons, so that's part of my job. I try and recruit software engineers. And I find that that's a really exciting community, and it's growing in a really interesting way. And so in the last couple of years in New York, you've seen an incredible increase in the amount of engineering meetups, and they're very startup-centric. Like a lot of the people that go to these meetups work in startups. And there's been these incredible efforts to sort of change the way students at universities who are studying computer science think about startups in their careers. So these are efforts like Hack New York. And in the Northeast, you get this sort of thinking about startups often, that it's like, they're dangerous, they're scary, I should just work for Google where I'll be safe. But efforts like Hack New York are really changing that thinking. The way that these young people think about where they should go to work. And that's incredibly exciting to me.
This is a really good point, because I think as this history is being created in front of us, and we have a decade to draw on, is that people can think now, I can have a career in startups, whereas before it was kind of like a up and out sort of thing. You try, you fail, you go back to finance or something. And I think that people are thinking, because they see someone who's been, kind of climbed up the ladder through being a specialist in an area, whether it be sales or engineering or media, they're on their fourth company. They've had exits. They've made a lot of money. They've done well. They're super connected. And they're not the founder. They don't have to be the founder. Right? The founder is probably the least probable way to actually make money, as it turns out. It really is around concentrating talent into the best ideas. And as this Darwinian, act of companies is being formed in the city and like in the Valley and other places, people start making more and more choices that says, this is my passion. I'm very good at this. And I'm going to spend the rest of my career, 20, 30 years, developing and perfecting this talent for startups. And it's actually, when I look at the portfolio, so we're backed by Unisquare Ventures and First Smart Capital and the Founders Fund. When you're in the room with these funds, like, the average age is in the early 30s to late 30s. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not kids. I mean, there are a handful of startups. Yes, there are some startups that they do. But on the whole, they're grizzled, like, tired, people building things, because it takes, tens of thousands of hours to get good at something. And building companies is as much about the idea as is, executing and prosecuting the growth of a company. And so the more that happens and more people get recycled through and you get good at something, you find these niches and the community gets strong, you can build a whole, career path and do extraordinarily well economically in your giftedness.
The thing that I'm interested to kind of see if is going to happen is, I know over the past 3 or 4 years, and we want to make this not a kind of East Coast, West Coast conversation like Biggie, Tupac. It's just, that's not the purpose of this panel. But I know over the past few years, New York has had a bit of an inferiority complex. We felt like we're like the underdog, and you see a lot of entrepreneurs kind of rallying behind each other in the city to kind of help turn New York into something pretty special. And I honestly take quite a bit of pride in the fact that New York is emerging as a real place to start and grow a business. And I think it will be interesting to see if that mentality exists. It's kind of like fake it till you make it. And for a few years, we were kind of saying, New York, it's a great place to start a business, but it wasn't really happening. But now that it's really happening, right, I'm curious to see if that momentum continues.
Yeah, and I think the culture is really, if I can call it, top down, right? The mayor is very entrepreneurial, as I call him the entrepreneur in chief. I mean, if you ever visited the city government in New York, if you go to City Hall, the mayor has no office. No one has any offices in City Hall, and everybody sit in an open bullpen, just like a startup environment. And I think that really changed the mentality in terms of how the cities work with the startup community. I mean, we launched incubator program, we launched seed fund, and Barry alluded to, and we also show it in the video, that the city has put forward $100 million to get the best engineering school to build a new campus on Roosevelt Island in New York. And we believe that is some of the permanent changes that we are seeing in New York, on top of the disruption in the financial services or the media industry, that really changed the way that the businesses are working together.
And the mayor, I mean, he doesn't just do videos. He's totally accessible. His deputies, what are they called? Like, what's Bob? What's
the deputy mayor.
Deputy mayor, yeah, literally deputies. They're all, really, really supportive of the startup community. And if you need something, if you want them to come to an event, I mean, they're like, yes, I mean, how can I help? Which I think is, I mean, I don't know if that's, it seems to me that's probably pretty unique, but it seems very unique for a big city like New York.
Right. So I was told that I shouldn't keep marketing New York and talking about our good side. So maybe I can touch on, and what are some of the challenges that you are facing as a startup founders, leaders in New York, in continuing to grow your businesses, or as you invest in new businesses? What are some of the challenges that your companies are facing?
I'll go first. The beach, a good beach, is like 2 hours away, and during the summer, It could be 4 hours away. And the mountains, a good skiing mountain, is like a good 2 or 3 hours away. That, to me, is the biggest challenge.
Okay.
I think the biggest challenge we've seen is just, you know, recruiting and retaining talent. So while New York is a dynamic market, a lot of people from all over the country come with big dreams and big aspirations to graduate college, come to New York, and find that dream job. What's really challenging for us is particularly in the area of technical expertise, so thinking about developers, coders, engineers, front-end people, UX, those types of skill sets, there's still this big appeal for those types of people to graduate college and, you know, go out west for a lot of different opportunities. So I think the pool in which you're finding technical talent, although it's growing, and it's super exciting that it's growing, it's still challenging, and especially finding people at more senior roles who really do have a lot of startup experience and have been around and have had a couple of exits to take on those leadership positions. We still find ourselves kind of reaching a little bit out west sometimes to find the right person and convince them that the New York winter is not as miserable, because this year it was not.
Is it getting easier, though, to get them?
I think it's definitely getting easier because you're getting a lot more people. The influx is really coming in year by year. What you're also seeing is that for non-technical jobs, I think it's an amazing talent market. I think you're seeing more and more people who are graduating, let's say, business school as opposed to undergrad, and coming to New York and starting their own businesses, which was something that, you know, people didn't do 10, 15 years ago. People always, you know, graduated business school. There were the McKinseys of the world. There were the Goldman Sachses of the world. And, you know, that those were the reasons people came to New York. But now people are just saying, I have nothing to lose and everything to gain by starting a company. So guess what? This is my time to do it. And starting businesses and just that huge influx of creating jobs has been really exciting and amazing.
You know, on the technical front, what I've noticed is we're competing less, if not at all anymore, with the banks and the hedge funds looking to hire the technical talent. And I don't know if it's that they're not hiring or it's just not a cool job anymore.
Really the startups that I feel like we're competing with.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Googles of the world and whatnot who have presence in New York.
Yeah, but I remember early on, we were oftentimes competing with some big hedge fund or investment bank that was hiring somebody to, you know, go build some type of algorithm.
So you have a PhD in engineering and recruit. Something like that.
Yeah.
So tell us about what it's like for you recruiting.
I think recruiting is really tough, but from everyone I talk to, it's really tough everywhere.
Yeah.
So in small cities, it's really tough. In New York, it's tough. In the Valley, it's tough. And I think that's because, you know, the tech industry is growing really fast right now, and everyone only wants to hire top talent. It's like good engineers are okay. Great engineers is what you always want, because they're building your product. And that is key, and you want that code to be good in 5 years' time. So, and I think really it's just about trying to make your company appeal to those people, trying to have a great culture for engineering at your company, and that's what I try to do.
I mean, come clean, I mean, we have our entire engineering team is in India, because we couldn't, we're a software as a service, so we had to like reliably get talent and grow as fast as we could. And the reality was is that we couldn't, you know, we have 100 people on our product team. You can't assemble that in New York. And I didn't want to be in the Valley to do this because it would have been, those kind of distant conflicts. So it was very difficult to do both. You had some trade-offs there. But I think the other dimension is that we're getting a lot of the tech talent has an opportunity to stay on the East Coast before they go out to the Valley. So. Mm. You know, I've had fantastic results of hiring at a CME, which is my favorite school, WPI, RPI, MIT. So New York is kind of like at least creating enough traction to keep people there. But so I just echo the tech talent. You to get a really, really solid, VP of engineering, you have to go, I think, import them from the West Coast or from somewhere, because they're not yet in the city. Or if they are, they're already concentrated in a really good startup and they're going nowhere. So you got to draw them back to make it work in a lot of cases. So, but it's getting there. This is why I've been saying you got to think about, you know, a lasting vision of where things are going. So just this last coming up relative to this is the city is also having to get to learn how to teach patience. In the Valley, people want to talk about the future a lot, and they talk about where their company's going, how it's going to change the world, big ideas, and its potential. And New York is very short-term focused and inpatient. It's about where is it today? Where is it, you know, how is it executing today? And I think that the psychological shift, the gestalt between building something that is lasting and purpose, you know, for these companies, you is a very, very different psychology than, you know, the startup mania that is in the city now. It's important to have that. But you want to be focused on ideas that are lasting and important and have scale that transcend, you know, the cynic comparison that a lot of startups have in building things that are meaningful. So that's just maturity and people that learn out of experience failing and coming back and doing it again. But that's going to take time to solve.
Why do you think that New York has a today's culture? Is it the investment banking, the consulting, the history of this industry being our core industry set really develop a different set of mentality, like the talent really want to get paid, like today, if not at year-end or February when the bonuses are out. So they're a little bit more short-term, or are there any other factors that really shape the way that this
I think it comes from the investors. I think it's the investors are very short-term focused because they're venture people who have spent their careers in investment banking and private equity as opposed to being venture capitalists. And they're very, very different things. And the difference between East Coast and West Coast, and I think I have some of the best venture capitalists in the world on both coasts, it's radical. So very, very different. Very different psychologically, risks, betting a company, sense of ownership, authority at the CEO level. So that's something that needs to learn. Like, that's going to have to change to make these companies have greater returns and have greater outcomes.
And I think we really come from a deal-based culture in New York. So a lot of the industry that's in New York is all about, you know, getting a deal done. And so people just have this impatience around making things happen. And, you know, what also feeds into that is the cost of living in New York. It's not cheap to live in New York, period, the end. Like, you know, as a VC, we look at tons of businesses and think about, do I want to, you know, invest in this business where this guy has, you know, infrastructure and, you know, has to support his family and whatnot. It's going to cost, he's going to have to draw a $200,000 salary, or do I want to invest in this company where the guy, you know, CEO is 22 years old and can live on cupcakes? And so, you know, it's really the culture around wanting it now and getting it now is there because it's tough to live on nothing in New York.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is unique to New York. I think it is, in that, you know, New York is a very fast-paced city. And I think a lot of people have a hard time with the work personal life balance, and it kind of permeates every aspect of kind of professional life. I mean, it's just not acceptable to, you know, leave the office at 5 o'clock. It's just not acceptable to be unavailable over the weekend. And it's a combination, I think, to kind of Divya's point. I mean, you just have these other industries, you know, finance or legal or consulting, where they really are kind of 24/7 type jobs. And I think, again, I mean, I had this problem until I got married, just kind of having, you know, what is that right balance? But I mean, Divya, who is 7 months pregnant, which is incredible, I'm so happy for her. When was the last time you took a vacation?
3 years ago.
3 years ago. 3 years ago. And how much time were you going to take off after having your baby?
A week.
So, you know, again, I think that's, I mean, Divya is awesome, but that is just, that's really kind of the, I think that's the New York culture, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
For worse.
Yeah. For worse. David has convinced me I need to take 4 weeks.
How much time do you think you should take off? I mean, a week. Raise your hand up, it should be a week. See, zero. A month?
Like
2 years.
Especially if she sold her company.
Yeah, she just sold her company as well. So you can just drive them to the ground now. It doesn't really matter.
Well, I mean, we talk about these negative things like investors. Maybe not negative. It's just very unique to New York, right? Are there specific type of businesses that should get started in New York? I know I don't want to draw analogy versus the Valley, but if you review business plan, I'm sure many of the startup entrepreneurs come to you all the time, and when they show you a business plan, when will you say, well, for that business, you have to come to New York? So what type of business is that?
There's an inherent advantage to start something in New York, financial services, I would say, fashion, beauty. I mean, there's just the sourcing, the manufacturing, the supply, when I'm thinking about these consumer industries, I mean, it's all there. The talent, the people, the media outlets, it's just inherently a great place to start a business, I think, in those areas.
Yeah, yeah. On the financial services front, you know, Second Market is a financial services company. And the thing about New York, you know, with all the banks and everybody else, these guys, they don't innovate. I mean, they don't do anything. They're just stuck in their ways, and you can kind of run circles around them. And the best part about it is you can just hire away the best people from these places because it's just not an entrepreneurial culture. And so I would absolutely say a financial-related company has got to start in New York because, again, the talent is there. But also you get to see, I mean, I don't want to call them competition because I don't really view them the way, but it really is, and it's inspiring. You know, you have a meeting with XYZ Bank, and you're like, wow, like I can kick their ass all day long. And it's kind of nice to kind of be in that environment, not having to fly across the country to get that meeting.
There, I think you have to choose industries where, as you're describing, there's unfair advantage. So obviously media, fashion, finance, ad tech to some extent, because your Madison Avenue is right there, and you have all the media dollars being spent out of New York. But the other dimension to think about is that most of the stuff that's being built is built, like, on the stack. Like, we don't – they really are applications on the API, applications on, you know, code stacks that were invented on the West Coast. So we can't – we have yet to go into – down into real tech because it doesn't exist yet in New York at a level of scale with experience. And it may never. It just may be that we never go back and try to build stuff like that. And I think it's going to be – we're going to be all be expressions – sorry, and you're going to be upset about that, but
well, there are some great tech companies.
Yeah, there are, but on the whole, you don't have you know, generations of people who have a specific type of skill that would, you know, you could then build a whole org on. So
I mean, I wouldn't start a hardware company in New York,
right.
But I mean, MongoDB is in New York, MakeBot is in New York.
They have a huge office in Palo Alto.
Yep.
Huge jobs at Palo Alto. All those companies, huge engineering in the West Coast and Palo Alto.
Yeah.
Right, all their offices, bang, bang, bang. So it's a balance of those things, but it's they do rely on both coasts as things get more and more difficult.
And I think many companies rely on more than one place as they get larger.
We do,
You rely on India as well.
Yeah.
Well, given that we have two women on this panel, I have to ask this question. I mean, reading some newspaper article actually said that compared to other cities, New York's startup ecosystem is more friendly, more welcoming to women. My hypothesis is because we have this fashion, beauty, media industry advantage, and those industries are in general more open to women. Do you agree with that statement? How is the women entrepreneurial community in New York?
I think it's incredible. I think it's super exciting. I think being a woman in finance, when I was an analyst in investment banking at Goldman Sachs, in my entire group, there was one senior woman. Then I went into work into venture capital, and there was also one senior woman who didn't last. And so I really didn't have a lot of female role models and get the exposure to work with a lot of women. And then when I moved into the entrepreneurial community, I just found myself surrounded by really smart, successful women who had been there, done it, built their businesses. And so I just found it such a welcoming environment. I think post me becoming an entrepreneur, I've seen so many young women start new businesses, and I'm thrilled about it and always happy to meet with them, get to know them, and kind of teach them whatever I know and learn from them about all the things they've done. And I think that part of this has been not just the industries, and we talked a lot about this, we've kind of beat this point to death with food and fashion and beauty, whatever, but really also this alumni network of going to business school. When I came out of business school, and a few of my friends started businesses, and then as the years progressed, more and more started starting companies. But as the successive classes of people graduated from business school, we saw more and more female entrepreneurs coming specifically to New York. And so it's been really exciting to kind of see women make that choice to start a company and to be senior leadership in a startup and to come to New York to do it.
I mean, I agree. There's a lot of amazing female entrepreneurs in New York. Birchbox's co-founders are female, and they are amazing to work for. But there are not a lot of female engineers. Mm. I mean, there's a normal amount, which is not particularly high. And there are, basically, I'd say on both coasts, there are very few women in engineering leadership who are female. And so that means that you do not have that same cycle of mentorship or anything like that. You are more likely to have a male mentor than you are to have a female mentor. And that's normal. I think that'll improve over time. And it's up to women that are CTOs, women that are VPs to mentor the women that work for them and who work for other companies, and hopefully that improves.
This is a really important point because when we're first starting to scale in the company, we still have very few women in the company first because we're in technology, so there's fewer women in technology, unfortunately. You're also a startup, so the women were typically more risk-averse to go early. And so between those two factors alone, we had 5% of our workforce was women. Mm. And when I read the two interesting papers. One was, what's the critical mass that you need in a company that makes a company stronger that are women? And it was basically a third. Because if you have less than a third, women in particularly in meetings didn't have weren't able to communicate as a team to overcome the assertion or the directedness of the men in the room to actually move the company forward. It was it's actually a significant liability for a business not to have the right conversational dynamics where these best ideas actually bubble up. And we made a big initiative the last 2 years to go, we have about a third woman in the New York office now, which is amazing, and we're trying to get more women on our executive team. There's this interesting little thing about this relative to this, which is they asked an audience of executives, they said, what degree of confidence do you need to have to raise your hand in a meeting or a classroom, and this turns out. And so for men, it was like, for women it was, I need to feel like out of 10, I got to feel about 7 or 8 out of 10 to raise my hand, right? Guess what it was for men?
2.
So that's actually a huge risk because men feel significantly more overconfident about opinions and women don't. And so having the voice balance actually gets those numbers into a much more common place where you get to the best idea. And we deliberately have been focusing on those sort of things, and it's not perfect, but to make sure that dynamic voiced. That has to happen earlier in startups and I hope more women get into it because it's not really a risky career choice and they can have a lot of impact.
I think it's amazing. I mean, if I look back at my career, when I was, 21, 22 years old and at my first job, I was surrounded by really, really intelligent men. And I'm so proud to come into work every day, and 80% of my workforce is women. I mean, that's a large number. And it's just such a rewarding feeling to be able to create jobs for so many young, talented women.
Yep. And I think the mentoring support is not just for women. I think I've talked to all the entrepreneurs, and they really value having a good mentor or more than one mentor. And I think, David, earlier you mentioned how New York startup ecosystem is still relatively young. It probably takes us another 20, 30 years to be more mature, to have the billion-dollar exit. So as you grow your company, I mean, Barry, David and Divya just sold your company, but as you continue to grow your business, who do you go to for advice? I mean, do you find people in New York who can advise you to, grow into that billion-dollar company?
I have a couple, maybe like one. Everything else is the West Coast. Mm. I mean, it hasn't happened. There's a couple people I really admire who have done really well, and I'm close with them. But a lot of the, I'd say 2/3 of wisdom comes from the Valley right now.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just because the community is just, we're building the community that they had 20 years ago that's now emerging through.
Yep.
But your job in a startup is to get good at building a company. And the idea is one thing, but the rest of it is actually building and leading and dealing with, the CEO's job is bad news all day long. That's the job. And so you need to learn how to do that well to be successful. And that advice is, at least for startups, has come most profoundly for the West Coast because they've just done it longer. But it's starting to emerge in New York, so it'll take a little bit of time.
Yeah, I mean, I raised money last year from a West Coast venture capital firm, and they took a seat on my board, and I can see my Series A investor, kind of helped me get the company to, the size and the value it is today, but this new investor brings in a completely different, set of experience, and, it's all about pattern recognition, and and so it's that's who I'm relying upon now for a lot of my mentoring.
Yeah, and I think the good news is I think a lot of West Coast investors are now paying regular visit to New York to meet with the entrepreneurs, and many of them are actually set up offices and staff permanent people in New York to work with the startup ecosystem. And I think that's
very
a
good
permanent
very good at a board level because the greater, where in the past there wasn't a lot of cross-pollination of East and West Coast deals, all the best deals are basically funded East and West Coast. So you have again, this is the Tupac thing, but the point is, like, that commingling of experience and knowledge and discovery is accelerating, you know, patience and metrics and models and experience, where in the past it didn't exist. And the faster it gets balanced, there's better.
Yeah, and that's exactly my story. So I'm New York-rooted, New York business, and raised West Coast money. And really, instead of doing what you guys do, which is, you know, look to people that are mentors in terms of investors and whatnot, I really look to other entrepreneurs. I feel like the tactical advice you can get from someone who has actually suffered the problems that you've had or has hit the hurdles and the roadblocks and the obstacles, it's just, at the end of the day, every single day when you come to work, you're trying to do it better, faster, cheaper. And you're just like, who can I talk to who can help me get it better, faster, cheaper? And so I think having a network of people who are successful entrepreneurs, who have built their businesses and sold them, has really been the biggest thing for me. I mean, I have asked so many people for help. I've asked people I barely know for help. And I take no pride in it. I think it helped me build my business a lot quicker and a lot faster and accelerate the growth that we were able to achieve by having that humility and having the ability to know that I could either sit there, try and figure it out myself, waste money and waste time, or I could go to someone who's been there and done it before and get two bits of their knowledge that's going to save me the time and the money to get there faster.
Another thing I've noticed recently, actually, is for a lot of the young New York companies that are getting funded, you know, it's now kind of a cool thing to be an angel investor. I guess I'm one of those people. So you see a lot of Wall Street money starting to come into early stage deals. And one thing that I'm noticing is because there's this kind of, you know, lack of kind of mentors, advisors in the community, you actually see some Wall Street money pretending to also be giving advice, and it's amazing how terrible some of the advice is that these companies are getting from these people just because, you know, they make $5 million a year as a banker. They think they know how to kind of create or grow a company. So I try to encourage these entrepreneurs to kind of get a range of advisors, but I can see a lot of these financial legal types trying to live vicariously through these entrepreneurs.
Yeah, and I think that's a very important piece of advice. I mean, as I talk to you, all of you, about how you started your business, I mean, you've been in New York for quite some time, right, even before you started a business. So it's very easy, I think, for you to call up your friend, call up your neighbor and ask for help. If one of the members in the audience want to come to New York and start their business or even look for a business, look for a startup where they can work with, What's your advice? What's your one piece of advice to them and say, go here or find this person, or how can they get started?
See if you can get an invite to David Kidder's monthly serial entrepreneurs breakfast. That's brilliant. Funding or a job or a co-founder there. Trust me.
Yeah, there's no lack of events in New York. There's no lack of tech meetups.
Every night there's a half a dozen.
Hundreds
of people meeting every single night. It's every single night there's stuff going on.
Be social. You'll meet people.
This actually is a huge... I mean, the inner kind of entanglement of the city is very... This is a lot different than the West Coast, because it's West Coast is actually much more spread out. You're more... when you do socialize, it's typically with your workers in the office. In New York, you leave work because there's a lot of stuff going on. The interest people have transcend technology. It's the arts. It's museums. It's music. So your interconnectedness actually goes much further outside of work as it does inside of work, whereas you're not going to hang out and play Xbox in, you know, the strip mall your office is in. You know, the city is alive, and you're going to go do an event, and you're going to have all sorts of options that are not in other places. So the trade-off is you're going to be exposed to a lot more diversity and a lot more, you know, cultural things, and that's the connectedness that you're going to experience. The downside of that is that you're probably going to lose some part of the conversational value of total immersion in your industry, which is, you know, you go to the West Coast, it's like every conversation is Groundhog's Day, and that's fine, and you potentially can move your company forward faster, but I think that the optionality and the diversity part, you're going to lose, and the number of people and the concentration and stuff, just purely from the grid, the entanglement of that grid is going to be different too.
I think that's very true. In New York, you go to an event and you might meet really interesting people, but you're like, oh, I thought there'd be a bunch of engineers here. So, and that can be great, but it can also be bad if you were very focused on, like, I was going there to recruit.
Yes.
So I think that's a really good thing for, like, having events for, like, different purposes.
Yep.
And so, you know, we were talking about mentorship and, you know, how to grow these different communities. And so one of the things that we're doing in New York is we have this thing called, like, CTO school, where we're trying to, like, basically network all the CTOs because, you know, tech people don't network sometimes quite as much as, you know, business people who've been to business school and are, you know...
You are the quietest on the panel.
I am the quietest on the panel. It's true. But by basically making events where there are no business people allowed, where there's no recruiters allowed, it's sort of a safer place for people to get together and talk and present and learn how to close some of these skill gaps we were talking about with the West Coast and some of the better trained people being on the West Coast. So things like that can help. Going to very focused meetups, but then also going to more general meetups, like the crazy New York tech meetup, which is fun and insane at the same time.
So New York is doing, Bloomberg does a big data event now. It's got like 600-700 people trying to get every month. I mean, like, this is an area, actually, is an interesting area that as the finance world gets blown up, thank God, it's getting moved into, like, you know, there's a lot of talent that has not been trained to work in startups, but has actually been trained in data and data mining and security in Wall Street, that's going to get unlocked. The big question is can those people be retrained? You know, they're going to have to deleverage to get into the right economics where they can do a startup, but that's going to happen just innately with where things are going. And if they can learn how to, you know, become more entrepreneurial, there's, you know, potential there that we're going to have a huge... I mean, I think JPMorgan Chase has, like, more engineers than most tech companies, like 35, 40,000 people in software in a bank. I mean, these are the biggest technology companies on the planet, that they haven't, they're just trapped and they're trained in that bureaucracy. That's been broken. So the question is, can that actually tip over and those people be productive in a startup environment, and can you get the economics to work? And that's going to be, that is going to have to happen. It's just going to take a long time, but I think it's in place.
Yeah. One thing you need to think about when you're thinking about your own networking as a senior person at your startup is, don't be afraid to encourage your existing team to reach out to other people and develop their own network of mentors. So one of the things I, you know, struggled with in the early days is, like, do I have my community manager go talk to these five other startups, their community manager, and see, like, what exciting stuff they're doing on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, and Pinterest? I'm like, are they going to poach her? Is she going to lose her job? Is she going to want to go somewhere else? And I learned pretty quickly that the best thing that I could do was actually to empower my team, empower my marketing person, empower my community manager, empower my technology team to actually build their own network, develop their own set of mentors, to really leverage all the people in the New York startup community and to learn from them and to also share with them some of the exciting things that we're doing that are actually working for us. And to not be so afraid that they're going to get poached for a job, because at the end of the day, if they're going to leave, they don't believe in your vision and what you're trying to do, and they may not believe in you as a leader to begin with, and so you might as well just, you know, take the risk. And I think that the plus that has come out of it is far outweighed the negative. Mm-hmm. And I just think that them having that network that they can call of people who understand their domain expertise and understand marketing really well, and talking to other marketing people, talking about direct acquisition channels, my marketing person has become infinitely savvier, and she's learned a lot more than I probably could have ever taught her. And so, you know, let your team kind of go out there and build networks. It's just going to have a multiplier effect on your business.
Everybody but your engineers.
Right.
Well, your engineers are going to, people will try and poach them all day long anyway.
No, they're like, right. They're like protected species. Like, yeah. I don't, like, they're in a, there's, they're no way.
Wildlife.
Like, when you mentioned, like, the meetup for tech CTOs, I've had, like, armed guards.
So we don't allow any recruiters in as a quiz to get in to the meetup.
Yes, totally.
So everyone's not harassed. But I think the thing is, you know, people will try and coach your engineers no matter what. And it's great to actually help them grow their careers. So one great thing to do for engineers is to encourage them to present at conferences, engineering conferences, so they can grow their skills too and become better technologists.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the good thing is we have over thousands of startup now, and Google, Facebook, Twitter, like all of these West Coast company, and also entered into New York and building thousands of workforce in New York, and half of those are engineers, so it's really beneficial to us. So I'm going to ask one last question before I open it up to the audience. it's probably unfair questions, but if you look at your crystal ball, what will Silicon Alley look like in the next 5 to 10 years? And how should we as a city measure our success?
So this is my prediction. I think that compensation in New York City, which has been historically been driven by the financial services space and legal profession and consulting, is going to drop dramatically over the next decade. I think we're going to see, we saw the peak, and it's going to all come down. And so I think what we're going to see is an acceleration in the growth of startup creation, of capital, of talents, because I think the city is going to just become cheaper to live in. I don't know if you pay attention to Wall Street bonus headlines, but this past year, every single major bank, this is a big deal, they capped cash bonuses at $125,000 or $150,000. And that's a lot of money, but to an investment banker, that's nothing. And the rest of their compensation is being deferred out over a number of years. And these are people who kind of have built a whole life and lifestyle around making a few million dollars a year. And the financial markets are fickle, and if we have a boom or whatever it may be, it may change. But as of right now, my prediction is I think we're going to see compensation dropping. We're going to see a lot of people leaving the financial services space. You're going to see law firms consolidating, and you're going to see New York as a place to live become a lot more affordable, which is going to, I think, support the acceleration in what we're all doing.
Divya?
No comment.
I agree with Barry. I think people are taking very similar position across the board, which is, you know, your home equity was your economic wealth for the last half millennium. And I think that people are going to look at them, their gifts in the next half millennium, as their wealth. I think they're going to see what their skill is and what their, you know, their ability is, how they're going to create a sustainable life. And they're either going to do that on their own with a team, or they're going to join a team to do that. And so the binding of talent around focusing on ideas is going to become much more of potentially the only path forward and because of this deleveraging, these changes. The other thing I predict will happen will be, I actually believe there might be, startups are going to fail much faster because the seed investments going to A investments, these companies are sticking around too long. And they're coming back for the next round of funding when they haven't actually solved some of the key problems that typical mature companies in within a year or two should be able to solve, even basic metrics to get them over the next hurdle. And so I think we're probably going to go through a wave of startup failures, which is very, very important. It's probably late in coming. And I think what will happen in New York and potentially West Coast, but definitely in New York, because West Coast already has figured this out, is they're going to be able to kill off bad ideas faster so they can get talent into the right ideas. So the one of the problems that we have is we have too many startups and too many smart people chasing bad ideas, and it's too dilutive. And so that natural Darwinian thing is actually has got to take place so we can have fewer potentially, but a better system of aggregating and getting companies to a place where they actually can have trajectory. And that system will probably be built in 5 years, and then 10 years you'll probably have a pipeline of maybe 20 or 30 companies that have gone either public or sold for over $500 million or more, and it'll be credible.
Or on second market.
Or the second market, sorry. That'd be a greater number.
That's great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think one of those things that all those, you know, seed stage companies are doing is they're training people who will be great to work at startups. So yeah. I'm hoping to hire them all,
yep.
Basically. And also, I think there's a lot of amazing e-commerce companies in New York at the moment who are getting big, who are growing really strongly. And I think what we might see is real innovation in the e-commerce space. So I'm hoping for like real technical innovation there, real innovation around social commerce, that kind of thing. I think that's going to be incredibly exciting.
Last thing, and I'll shut up. But I hope that in 5 years, people talk about creating lasting companies, like ideas that last. Not, I can't wait to sell my company. Mm-hmm. Why haven't you sold the company? What have you been doing for lasting ideas with big concepts that take 10 years to build, and whether they take a little or a lot of money, it's irrelevant. And they learn to have patience, and that funding is a non-event. You know, you don't have a party when you raise money. You party when you build something meaningful, yeah, and you grow and you do something important for clients and customers. That's something to celebrate. I think that's just maturing of a business.
Yeah, I think at the city government level, we are trying to build an ecosystem that will last. Right, so we have a much longer-term planning process as we work with the startup, work with the enterprises to support innovations in New York. So
one more term. Can we do it?
Well, we'll create an app for that. So with that, why don't I open it up to the audience if anyone has any questions for the panelists.
Hey guys, hi Divya.
Hey, how are you?
She was my freshman bio seatmate. I have a question for you guys that are on the software side. Do you think the next Salesforce could be New York or something that's an enterprise software company? I work at PowerViews, which is a social commerce SaaS company, and I often wonder whether maybe with the emergence of e-commerce or with certain verticals like financials, you could have a SaaS company there, but could you have a Salesforce type of company?
I'm in the SaaS business, and so I don't know actually yet. I mean, it's possible, but this is another part of the expertise that is still maturing through New York, is that how to build a SaaS correctly is actually an extremely hard thing to do. And when you sit down and talk with an investor who knows how to build SaaS, exact targets, amateurs, bizarre voices, Salesforce, I mean, I talk to these guys, they're brilliant. Like, utterly brilliant. They know the numbers so cold. They know the magic number. They'll help your whole business get there. That doesn't exist yet. And, you know, even for our own companies, we've been scaling up. I probably lost a year of my life because of, you know, not having enough of that expertise at my board level. So I don't think the city – I think there's potentially a couple ideas, but that's something that you're in your third generation of those type of companies in the West Coast. They know how to do it the first time, the right time. And companies are so stupidly hard to build, you typically only get one or two of those big mistakes. And so, you know, we might see that now, but you also need the industry, the skies, to open up and say, we need a new CRM company, of which there's four multiple billion-dollar companies, and one company can zag where everyone's incrementally zigging. So is social like CRM yet? I don't know, but it could be in 10 years. Maybe social is so important that it transcends Facebook. But right now, everything in this entire conference is built on Facebook. Facebook is its own internet. It's not like the internet 10 years ago where it was wide open. This is one grid that we don't own. So there's a lot of things that need to work out in the marketplace, and you need the skill to get there to get that one strike at the marketplace in a mature space to disrupt it. So we're getting there, but I think there's a lot of factors that are out of your control, but the skill one is still coming along. I don't know if it's helpful or not, but yeah. SaaS is very, very difficult to build well.
And one of the largest SaaS companies that I can think of that's in New York is like Buddy Media, which is in a social context. So I think that we're much more likely to build a large SaaS business around something fundamentally social or retail-driven or something where New York has domain expertise. But I think talent is going to be the biggest challenge because those businesses require a lot of people. And it's just hard to build a big business with a lot of people. Right.
You need the SaaS exists because people can switch from the thing they're using now to you.
Yep.
And you need to control almost everything in the marketplace. You can't control voice Facebook. We saw that 2 weeks ago. People need to be leaving something to go to you to show that position to grow. Because it's got to be something that you actually can get traction against, if that makes sense. So who knows? I think we're on the way, but it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out.
I think we can take one more question.
Quick question. So when you're recruiting from outside of New York, how much is the current cost of living issues, how much of an issue is that when you're as a barrier to recruiting the top talent?
I'm sorry.
The cost of living in New York currently is quite high. So when you're recruiting from outside of the city, from another part of the country, I mean, is that you pose a strong barrier to getting the people you're looking
30%
for?
30% more, maybe?
I think
it depends where you're recruiting from.
Yeah, it depends on where you live in. So if you try to live in Manhattan, then I think the cost of living is really, really high. But if you look at the startup community, a lot of the people now live in Brooklyn and Williamsburg and Dumbo, other parts of Brooklyn or Queens or Bronx. I think those are more affordable. And obviously there are a lot of people who live in the Jersey area or the Westchester area that offer even more affordable housing, which is close to New York. I mean, we have all the subway system, all the train system that connect the different boroughs, different cities to New York. So I wouldn't just look at focusing on the island, although I would love you to be on the island and pay our tax.
But if you're moving, if you're looking to move to New York and you, relative to what you're making now, you're going to need at least a 30% bump. That would be very simple. I'm not sure if that's what you're asking, but if you're going to move to even a startup, you're going to need some, there is going to be a difference of probably about a third of your income that'll make your lifestyle at least mostly even relative to where you are now if you're in a tier one or tier two city.
Well, thank you. I think we need to wrap up now, and thank you very much.